This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports Station.
And Brock, you are. And Brock, you are.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Let that fire!
Oh, yeah, rolling along here on Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports, 710salesports.com, Seattle Sports app as well. Brock gave us homework. We'll do that coming up at 7:30. At least you asked this time. Appreciated that. Thank you. 8:30, Kevin Burkhart joins. This guy's calling the Super Bowl this year, first time. That's got to be a pretty big thrill for him. So we're looking forward to talking to Mr. Burkhart at 8:30. Tim Hasselbeck told us yesterday, Brock, that the Seahawks can win a Super Bowl if they pay Geno Smith what he wants. Right? You believe him?
Well, what we think he wants. I mean, what the number that we have speculated.
Fair. It's a good point.
Right?
Yes. So, thank you. Thank you for jumping in.
Yes. So
right.
We think that's the number that he wants. It may be north of that. He may be watching these playoffs.
You think
going,
he wants $50 million?
And boy, and he was up to it yesterday, too. Someone's not gotten in his ear. He continues to third-person tweet. God bless him. But, yeah. That's right around the franchise tag number that they would put on him, the transition tag, whatever it is, $32 million.
Mm-hmm.
And thus you kind of use that as the landing point. And Tim says, yeah. Yeah. I think,
yes, I think you can. But I think that, you know, if you look at, yes, you, to answer your question, yes, because I think if Geno Smith can play, you know, like composite, like how he played for the vast majority of the season, if you get that kind of play in the postseason, that's good enough to win a Super Bowl.
And you got it for 2.5 quarters of a playoff game, and then the first half, he couldn't have played any better. He was phenomenal, and really he had one drive in the whole third quarter where he drove him right down the field and unfortunately fumbled after some penalties, and the turnover was problematic. I would tend to agree with Tim on that, by the way. But I would quote an old friend of ours who I think we're going to play today. We got some Cowards there.
I've already played some.
Oh, okay, good. Remember when Coward went through Russell Wilson's attributes early in his career, right? Athleticism,
check.
A plus, arm, A, size, not ideal.
Ideal.
So can they win a Super Bowl? You know, with not ideal. I mean, not ideal to pay Geno Smith that kind of money, and certainly was not in any of their scope whatsoever 5 months ago.
Well, you know, it's interesting, this conversation, and because I don't think the question is, can a team win the Super Bowl with Geno Smith paying him $30 million? That's not the question. The question is, can the Seahawks win the Super Bowl if they pay Geno Smith what he wants? And that is both a positive and a negative. It's a positive because you've already seen him and what he fits in this scheme. Right. With these receivers, the chemistry, the coach, the coordinator, et cetera, the command he's got of it, all of those things factoring in the positive, yep, to answer, can the Seahawks win a Super Bowl if they pay Geno what he wants? The negative is what they need to do to make the rest of this roster Super Bowl worthy. Last year, they were not. We know that they're out, and they very easily could have been out before they even, you know, made the playoffs.
And if we're all going to be honest with ourselves, it's been quite some time since they've had a roster.
True.
It looks like these teams, four teams that are by far record wise and what they've done over the last 3 months, the best in the league.
You think any of the four teams left could win the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Me too. I feel, yes, like any of these four teams could win the Super Bowl. We can make picks and determine who's going to win each game, but yes, I wouldn't be blown away shocked if any of the four teams left won the Super Bowl, and I wouldn't have been shocked if Buffalo had either.
And it wasn't too long ago, and you and I were still doing this show together, that we saw the formation of what these teams look like. So we don't have to go back, you know, 30, 40 years, Soto Mojo. We don't have to do that. We can look back and say, yep, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, this is what it looked like. This is what Super Bowl rosters look like. This is how complete your team has to be to get there. This is the kind of depth you have to have.
Because even with all of the studs that the Seahawks had and the coaching and everything else, they still won one Super Bowl, nearly another, and that was it. And yeah, not that that's nothing. That's an unbelievable accomplishment. But it's really hard to win. I mean, it just, the other teams are also really good.
Yep.
So can this team, with this roster, can they add enough talent to win while paying Geno Smith $30 million a year plus? That's the question. Not can a team, Can this team?
Mm-hmm.
If you think the answer is yes.
I do think it's yes, but there are so many dominoes that kind of fall the right way. The draft has to hit like it did last year. There has to be a significant trade. You do have to be very creative in moving dollars and cents around in that shell game that is a salary cap, Mike, and be willing to, well, go for it. Right. And again, that's why, like, in that whole, and we've learned this from John Schneider and the Seahawks over the years, that we live in a today. We live in a next week. We live in, like, next month. Right. They can't do that. And from personnel and drafts, they have to look out 12, 18, 20. Like, they've got a plan. And then, you know, obviously, kind of like Jerry DePoto says, you move puzzle pieces around and this happens and that happens. And, you know, nothing ever goes perfectly to plan. But this was not in any of their realm 4 months ago. To think that they were going to get back in the bidding of a quarterback taking up a huge chunk of their money, at least one of their own, right? At least Geno or Drew. This was not in their plan. So that, too, means, gosh, okay, so we got to manipulate, we got to move this around, and, boy, we got to make this trade happen. There's just a lot of other levers that have to fall the right way.
And are they, is it, I guess, then the next
versus
question.
If you don't do that.
Right. Is it easier?
It's a huge void to fill.
It's a major void to fill. But is it easier to fill that void along with the others with the available capital you have? I don't know the answer to this question. I mean, we're all going to speculate on it. But frankly, if John and Pete think that they can create a path to winning that includes paying Geno Smith, then they should do it. Right? Because of what he's done for them and what he could do and not having to find the quarterback, plus the effect on the locker room if you were to let him go could potentially be devastating. I don't know that. But, you know, there's at least another variable to think about there.
I don't buy that one quite as much.
It's something. It's a variable to think about. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but it's something to think about. If you can't, then you should just say, here's the number we believe we can win a Super Bowl at, and hold to it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that number is. I don't know if it's $5 million, $15 million, $25 million, $35 million. Whatever it is, you should say, this is the number at which we believe we can win a Super Bowl with Geno Smith. And then try to sign him for that number. And if he wants to go somewhere else, fine. And if you don't believe that Geno Smith can win you a Super Bowl, then you should move on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he showed you enough. And that's kind of where Tim leans into. And it was nice to get somebody that, you know, obviously watches these games mm-hmm. and knows the NFL, but isn't every minute of every day consumed by it like we are. And he looks at just the emotional intelligence, the emotional maturity, the 10 years that you have banked. It's a unique situation. And as much as we talked about it over the course of the year, like, wow, this is crazy. This is nuts. Rich Gannon, right? And try to put a frame of reference how crazy it is. Now looking back at the season, what a benefit that he was here 4 years. Mm-hmm. You don't get that. What a benefit that he's been in this league 9 years and he's banked all these life experiences that absolutely played a role in him having that emotional maturity, in handling press conferences right, in handling off the field beautifully, in winning over teammates in the organization. So, yeah, at the time it was crazy world. Now it's like, no, that kind of now makes sense. Right? Like so many things in life that we're in the moment, we're like, this is nuts. I can't believe this is happening. And then you look in the rearview mirror and are actually pretty thankful for it.
I got to tell you, man, everything you just said is true. Everything we heard, I understand.
It's your gut isn't buying it, though.
It's really hard for me to imagine that the team we saw this year is going to improve enough to win a Super Bowl while adding $30 million to their salary cap at quarterback. That's hard for me.
I mean, more put those numbers together, right? Of the last eight quarterbacks, these last four standing and where they sit.
Hard for me to imagine, man.
How big of a puzzle piece or actually how small of a puzzle piece they are in the salary cap.
It's hard for me to see that happen. Hard for me to write that script where you pay Geno Smith an additional $30 million and then you win the Super Bowl in the next 2 years. Really, that it's not him, but that script is really hard for me to write. And I'll tell you what. It might be hard for Mel Kiper Jr. to write because based on what we saw in his first mock draft that came out this morning, I don't know whether he sees them winning a Super Bowl under Geno Smith either. We'll give that to you next and everything you need to know. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710CLSports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, Brock, Mel Kiper Jr.'s first mock draft of the season is out, and in it, the Seahawks select quarterback, Will Levis, out of Kentucky with the number 5 pick. In this version of the world, Carter, Stroud, Young, and Anderson all go before they have the opportunity to select them. And with the 5th pick, they don't go defensive end. They go with a quarterback, Will Levis, who has all the tools, but didn't exactly have the production.
You know who Will Levis is? The multiple times I've watched him.
Ben Roethlisberger?
He is the love child of Blaine Gabbert and Jake Locker. Both top 10 picks. I mean, that's what they were. Both of them super toolsy. Now, here's the problem.
I think I just made the vomit emoji right here on the screen if you're watching.
Now, here's the problem. Neither Blaine Gabbert nor Jake Locker put mayonnaise in their coffee.
True.
Like Will Levis.
That's also true.
That is a hard pass.
Really?
Yes.
I think that's the most intriguing thing about Will Levis. Like, he's got the stones to do something like that. Absolutely. That kind of makes him intriguing to me. The love child of Blaine Gabbert and Jake Locker sounds like the worst NFL quarterback I could imagine. Maybe throw in the arm strength of Max Hall and you'd have like the world's worst quarterback. Anyway, maybe a preview of what's to come at the NFL Awards banquet. The Seahawks shut out of the rookie awards given out by the Pro Football Writers. That's not the big rookie of the year awards, but they both went to Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson, so we'll see what happens. And then this may surprise you, Pete Carroll, not on the list of candidates. Not on the list of finalists for Coach of the Year.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, only one Hall of Famer this year, Brock. It's Scott Rolen, who played in Philly and St. Louis. Is he deserving? Yeah, the numbers say so. They're Hall of Fame worthy. Defense was spectacular. All those, you know, gold gloves.
Yep.
I don't know, man. Maybe I'm biased. Maybe he's because he was in the National League the whole time, but did Scott Rolen ever strike you as a Hall of Famer while he was playing?
I know Brooksy Robinson played that third base pretty darn well.
I know.
People have said, well, he really set the table for Nolan Arenado and the rest of these third basemen and kind of showed the ceiling of what a defensive third baseman could be.
Scott Rolen was a really good player.
He was.
It's hard for me to put guys like him in the Hall of Fame. I don't know. Todd Helton, I think, is more deserving than Scott Rolen. He didn't make it in. Maybe he will, and I think he probably will next year. We'll see what happens with Billy Wagner as well. Scott Servais joining Shannon Dreyer yesterday on the Hot Stove Show. You know who he's excited to see?
Taking Oscar. Homer. I know that. We saw it firsthand. He's a very accomplished player. He's been, you know, one of the more consistent guys. I say that, and if you look back at his season last year, he got off to just a really rough start. I think he, you know, we saw him early in the year when we were in Toronto, and quite frankly, we handled him pretty easily. You could just tell his timing was off and whatnot, but he quickly got it right. And you know, that's a guy that's going to do damage, you know, against righties, against lefties, it really doesn't matter.
Interesting that he didn't say he was really looking forward to watching Luis Castillo like some are at spring training and camp. He went to stop. Don't give me that face. No, really, he's super, super excited to see the guy that we got to see in really big moments, actually, in spring training. Like, we all are. Like, I know you and I are. But Teoscar is loud, man. He makes loud contact. And that is what I'm anxious to see and compare and contrast to Nelly Cruz.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Don't give me the silent treatment.
I'm not giving you. What do you mean? I'm not talking over you.
You're giving me the little silent.
I'm not being silent.
I see
you're
what
talking.
You're doing. No, I see what
you're talking. I'm not talking in order to let people get what they want, which is more of you talking. Big opportunity for the Kraken to make some hay as they get 3 games in 4 days at home against a couple of beatable teams. Starts with Vancouver tonight. The Canucks just made a coaching change after struggling under Bruce Boudreau, so see what happens there. Then Calgary here on Friday, Columbus over the weekend. Columbus is terrible. They're in last place. Circle that game with Calgary. The Flames just behind you, I think 4 points behind you in the standings. And then looking forward to seeing who's healthy tonight. Andre Burakovsky and Jaden Schwartz both have been absent. The team had sent winger John Hayden back to Coachella after what I thought was a really good game that he played last week, but then he was recalled yesterday. Mm-hmm. So not sure yet. We'll see what happens at the morning skate and see this afternoon whether Burakovsky or Schwartz is able to go.
John Forslund, play-by-play man, is one of those guests. We've had him on twice on this show, and both times he has said things that continue to resonate around my skull. The first time it was about this team connecting and actually going on the road and why they've been so good on the road this year, and kind of comparing and contrasting protocols that made it difficult the year before. The last time he was on, he talked about how, you know, just from an organization and Coach Hextall in particular, learning just the ropes and learning year one to year two as a head coach, and learning when you have off days, give guys off days. Don't come in and practice. Not a college coach. Don't come in here and practice and grind and grind. Let them get their legs. Let them have time off. So after a few days off, kind of anxious to see the amount of juice and energy they'll have on the ice tonight.
All right, that is everything you need to know. Of course, we do that quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk Show.
Will Levis, quarterback at the University of Kentucky, and I have been known to put mayonnaise in my coffee sometimes.
Yeah, that's a yikes.
No. Nah? Really?
No, I don't think so.
To me, the yikes is putting coffee around your mayonnaise. Like, mayonnaise, great. I put mayonnaise on just about anything. The idea of drinking coffee is disgusting to me. So, you know, the fact that he drinks coffee around his mayonnaise is probably more disturbing.
But. I mean, people put a lot of stuff in coffee these days. There's oat milk. There's soy milk. There's almond milk. There's all sorts of dairy product. There's fake dairy product. There's all sorts of fake sweeteners and everything else. And I guess mayo. How do you make mayo? Eggs and oil, olive oil, basically.
Yeah,
those two things.
I mean, you're going to, you know, stuff coagulating for breakfast. Yeah. So maybe it all works. Brock, I got to tell you, what you just said really disturbed me. Like, a lot.
What?
I mean, I haven't watched Will Levis play, so I'm going entirely
and
on
I've
what
watched
I've
him play a half dozen times.
So that's
every
disturbing
time.
To me.
Well, every time, and especially this year, I'm like, I don't get it. It's kind of like I was, one of our listeners sent us a tweet. And it had his mock draft, right? And because there's all these fun mock draft machines. Mm-hmm. I think actually, boy howdy, that's what he's doing now. He's creating new algorithms for mock drafts. So you can now add trades. And this guy, you know, sent it to us. And I was like, wow, that looks pretty good. They traded, you know, for Buckner with the 20th and all these trades and added all this value. And then took Tanner McKee, QB Stanford, in the second round. I'm like, what? Even Mel's draft. Anthony Richardson in the top 10? I mean, you've watched these guys play quarterback, right? I mean, you didn't see Tanner McKee get sacked 9 times by the Huskies and he can't move and he's totally immobile, or Anthony Richardson just throw it, I don't know, into the 6th row in time and again. And yeah, he's a beautiful athlete and they got some of these measurables, but haven't we learned in the last few years when it actually comes to drafting QBs, this league is not what they were in 1999 nor 2009 or even 2017. Kind of wised up on some of that. So, yeah, I'm not buying, like Earl Thomas, I'm not buying that list. I'm not buying some of these QBs and 4 of them in the top 10.
It doesn't sound like you're buying Will Levis at all. I mean, what I hear from you, when you drop the names Blaine Gabbert and Jake Locker, you're telling me that Will Levis is not an NFL quarterback.
I'm telling you a lot of tools. I'm telling you checks a lot of boxes. And that's why the scouts and
the
GMs.
What's the hope? Well, if he goes right, who is he?
Josh Allen.
Right? Josh Ben Allen. Roethlisberger, Josh Allen, that kind of player?
Yeah, he's not quite as big as Ben, and I think he's 6'3"-ish, and whereas Allen is 6'6", you know, so a little shorter Josh Allen.
Okay.
And that is the hope.
Can he
plays
run
live.
Like Josh Allen?
Oh, yeah, he can run now. Big physical runner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's got top end. I don't think he's that dominant. He never was in the SEC anyway. And then this is the old argument. Well, you play in front of Kentucky's O-line. I mean, Kentucky's O-line last year was the worst of the worst, and he got beat up and beat up and beat up. And, hey, I know a little bit of that story, but, yeah, I just for the
didn't
fifth
work out
pick,
for you either. I don't want them drafting the next Brock Heward.
Nope. For the fifth pick in the draft? No.
Can't do it. Can't play with it. Can't do it. All right, Brock, you gave us some homework, and at least a few of us have actually completed our assignment. Did everybody? We'll see. It's next. Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710CLSports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle's Sports Station.
Brock's kind of become like a teacher of sorts. He likes to hand out homework. By the way, are you onto your second piece of free clothing that you're wearing right now? I saw the Fox jacket earlier. Now you got a Passing Time shirt.
Sure am. Oh, I'm sorry. Are they bouncing?
Are you bouncing your pecs at me?
Sorry.
Don't you bounce your pecs at me, sir. With all of your free clothing
you're
wearing.
You like that?
I mean,
free,
it's okay.
It's for me.
Yeah.
I can tell that. The logo is phenomenal.
The logo's great.
Yep.
But, you know, one piece of free clothing is probably going too far. Brock is has now put himself in the role of the teacher, and he's given us some homework. Today's homework, Brock, was?
Well, it was based on an article I read yesterday by Jeremy Fowler over there at ESPN, so that's where I stole the idea.
Yes.
And he interviewed a bunch of NFL executives. He's done it this last few years, actually, and some of them came to fruition. And he just said, hey, give me some outside the box. Give me borderline outrageous. This probably won't happen, but what could you see? Connect a few dots. Where there's smoke, could there actually be some fire? And give me some kind of outrageous thoughts of what could happen around the league.
Okay.
And I think maybe one of them last year was even Russell Wilson gets traded. And that came to fruition. So I thought, hey, let's spin that here a little local. And let's have the four of us each come up with two ideas. I appreciate you putting yours in the email. I think Maura and Justin and myself all had the same thought that, we'll keep the answers to ourselves.
I didn't realize we were doing that.
No, that's okay.
I had the thought that I just finished my work for the night and was about to eat dinner, and I didn't want to do homework.
Yeah, I got late assignment.
Right. Yeah, that's fun. As you're walking out the door,
I
your teacher's
send
like,
on my email,
oh,
and I was
hey,
like, time
one more
for
thing.
Tacos. And Brock was like, hey, do you guys want some homework?
Oh, yes, finally.
Yeah. You know what, Maury? You did send an early email yesterday, too.
Brock got your email and was like, hey, want some homework?
Let's see.
Because I like to get my work done and then eat my dinner and watch TV and relax.
What time was that?
7:01.
Yeah, I mean, Maury did her work early and Brock decided to punish her for that. So thanks. I'm sure that's probably why she did her work just a few minutes before she came in. As you know, I, Brock, use our email not to tell you things, but to tell myself things the next morning.
Correct.
So that's why I had to put it in the email. Feel free to ignore whatever I write. It's yes. Just there for me.
Gotcha. Yep. So I kind of dig mine. I liked yours too.
All right, give me an outside the box storyline.
Do you want an outside the box storyline?
Yeah, put your glasses on and give me one.
Because I put them in my notes on my phone. Seattle trades its second round pick number 37 mm-hmm. for Alvin Kamara. And the Saints also send back $16 million in cash to Seattle to cover half of Kamara's salary the next 2 years. An elite pass catcher and protector will be a secondary punch to Ken Walker to make this running back duo the best in the game.
That's bold.
Yeah.
It's kind of doubling down on your thought.
Is that all he's worth now?
It's kind of doubling down on your thought of, hey man, I know we need to fix defense and there's 5 and 20 in salary cap, but you also have to add to this offense. You also can't just sit there.
How do you run to your strengths? How do you give more weaponry?
And if you're going to deal with the Niners in this division, and you're going to deal with the Eagles in this conference, and you're going to deal with some pretty behemoth defenses, and we know every single year this running back room is ravaged by injuries, and Pete loves running backs more than anything else. So it's an outside the box, likely not going to happen, but a guy with 2 years left on his deal, a Saints team that's got a lot of holes to fill as well, and would they be willing to send back a little cash, and can you take Alvin Kamara off their hands? In a pretty good running back draft, by the way, as
without
well.
Without looking, yes. How old is Alvin Kamara?
Don't know.
Without looking, any guess?
I'm going to say 30.
He
was young when he came in the league, real young. So I'm going to say he's 31.
I thought he's like 27, 28.
Moore is absolutely right. He is 27 years old.
There you go.
Yeah. So because
he was like 21 when he came.
My gut told me the same thing, Brock, as you. Like, oh, that guy's in his 30s. Like, you can't do that. 27? Man, maybe there's a little conversation there. I'm intrigued. I don't know if I give up one of the second, like certainly not the first of the two second round picks. But all right, I'm intrigued. Justin, what do you got? Give me a bold storyline.
Yeah, what's your line about having the wrong franchise quarterback?
You are better off having no franchise quarterback than the wrong one.
And I asked you at the end of last year, how long is the leash for Pete and John? And you said they get one more quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So I have them trading picks up to get their first quarterback that they're going to pick in the top five.
Bryce Young.
Yeah.
That was on my list as well. Seahawks mm-hmm. trade up to get Bryce Young.
It's like it's going to be his sword to either pull out of the stone or fall on
mm-hmm.
for Pete and John.
I don't think it's impossible. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's that outside of the box either. But
if it was a different quarterback, I could see it a little bit more. Now, you do have the opportunity. Chicago has the number one overall pick. They don't need a quarterback. So if you absolutely 100% think that Bryce Young is the future, is the man, is the next Patrick Mahomes, etc., you probably have the ability to go get him if you really want him. You'll have to compete with Houston. I got to imagine Houston doesn't really want him, or they would have, lost the last game of the season and just taken him. Idiots.
That makes too much sense.
I don't, I mean, maybe Indy really wants him, but if you really, really want it, with two first-round picks, including number five, you could go up and do it.
And it's pretty interesting that
I don't see it with Bryce Young.
He's the one that KJ and I both think that Schneider would love.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that KJ has not hesitated all season long, and I frankly haven't either, that if there's one guy in this grouping of QBs that I would say, yep, this guy's just kind of different than the rest.
Is he worth two first-round picks?
So is he worth basically what you got in return for Russell? You know, this number five pick and next year's, you know, Denver Broncos pick? Is he worth those two?
You can look at it that way.
That's how you have to look
at it. But is he worth what you need right now? I mean, is he worth a, you know, fifth pick in the draft defensive end and, you know, maybe trading the 20 pick for DeForest Buckner?
Well, if he's right, he gives you 5 years of unbelievable value.
It's true.
In this whole conversation of paying Geno and all of this, as you're seeing with Joe Burrow right now. And, yep, that's a pretty intriguing one.
That was on my list as well.
Should we pass Maura since she went to bed?
Yeah, Maura, what'd you come up with right before class last minute?
Right after Taco Tuesday?
I did all my papers last minute in college. It went fine. Don't worry. I am going with, I don't know if this is, it's bold because it's not something a lot of teams do, but you could probably see it happening. I have all three of the guys that spent the most percentage time, snap counts, at defensive tackle, Al Woods, Puna Ford, Quentin Jefferson. I say they move on from all of them and basically start from scratch this year.
I don't even know if that's bold. Like, I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, how many teams do you know in the offseason that get rid of like their all of their starting defensive tackles?
But I think that's
what I'm saying.
I think that's going to happen
because of how it played out, but that is not normal.
Al Woods is the only one that I would think there's a possibility he's back and you know, they sign him for a veteran minimum and use him sparingly because they brought in other guys around him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even think that would be that shocking. Like, I'm with you. I think that's likely to occur.
Mm-hmm. All right, Salky, number two. You got one more?
Seahawks trade up to get Bryce Young. That was on my... Oh, sorry. You wanted a different one?
Oh, that's... You already used that one.
You copied Justin's homework.
Well, no, it's on my list, but Justin, you know, got to the teacher
Justin
first. He copied my homework from the email that I sent.
Called my name first.
And then used it before... Well, I didn't think you were going to steal my work. I didn't think you were going to plagiarize so blatantly in front of my eyes.
Next.
My bold one probably is too late for, but it was Pete fires Clint Hurt and elevates Sean Desai in order to avoid losing him.
Mm.
It's not going to happen at this point. If they were going to make a move at coordinator, they would have done that. But just in terms of thinking through bold, crazy things that could have happened, if he's looking around and seeing the other teams interested in Sean Desai, who he liked a lot last year also, and says, you know what, I just can't lose this guy. And he commented on the communication, et cetera, this year with the defense. It didn't go the way they wanted, especially up front, which is, you know, frankly, where Clint Hurt came from.
Yep.
You know, that would have been a bold move to, after 1 year, make a move. He's not going to do it.
You don't think so? You don't think that now that he's interviewed in Cleveland and they go with Jim Schwartz, he's interviewed in Minnesota, in Miami, you don't think Sean Desai would give Pete maybe in the organization, hey, a little bit, just want to let you know?
I think there is a possibility. If you wanted a bold prediction that could actually come true, because this one now probably cannot. They're not going to fire Clint Hurt. It will not happen at this point in the offseason. But if Pete Carroll decided he wanted to elevate Sean Desai and make co-defensive coordinators,
correct,
that I think is a possibility. How's that?
Yeah, yep. And part of me really would like to see that, because I think his horsepower, he being Sean Desai, and his influence and what they did in the back end of their defense, Carl Scott, were pretty big triggers in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pete's probably still the ultimate puppeteer. That's his baby, that whole secondary. But, yeah, that is one that I wouldn't mind seeing happening. Okay, because you just totally whet my appetite with the whole A.J. Brown thing. I told you, you planted that seed, and it has just fostered much fruit. Like, I just can't I can't get away from it now, whether it's DeForest Buckner, whether it's Vita Vea, whether it's Alvin Kamara. So this would be the second-round pick. Maybe even a third-round pick, but I think probably the second-round pick. And that would be trading that pick to the Buffalo Bills for Mitch Morse. This is not a great center draft. There's a couple interior guys that are intriguing, But it really feels like since Max Unger, we've gotten bits and pieces of Max Unger. We've gotten some of the play and movement from Ethan Posick, who, by the way, had a really good year as far as Pro Football Focus goes. We certainly got some of the leadership this year from Austin Blythe and communication. Mitch Morse was a guy they loved out of college at Missouri, goes to Kansas City. Mitch Morse is just a 6'6", 310-pound war daddy, pro bowler, right in the middle of your line at center. So 2 years, again, I kind of tried to look for veterans on the last couple years of their contracts, maybe teams that need to get younger and need to clean some things up. And you've got some pretty valuable trade assets and trade pieces. So, yeah, those were another veteran that I thought.
You're going to have a hard time. That one's not a no for me. But, again, you're going to have a hard time selling me on dealing away any of my top four picks unless I'm getting something back to help my defense. And I know you got to continue to add to your offense. I don't disagree with that, Brock. I mean, I said it the other day.
Yep.
I agree with you because I agree with me.
That's right.
But I...
which is really what I'm doing. I'm playing to the teacher here. You called me the teacher. I'm really playing to the audience.
But I it's hard for me to imagine taking those kind of resources and dealing them away unless I'm confident in what I'm doing with my defensive line. Now, maybe you got a plan for the defensive line that you know, just relies on free agency, et cetera. And you don't need all of those picks to do it. And I know you're not talking about trading both for Kamara and for Morse, but it'd be a little hard for me to continue to add, to use those assets to add. Now, I say that, but if you are drafting, you know, a stud defensive end with the number five pick and a stud defensive interior lineman at 20, then you take one of those other picks and say, hey, we're now going to add to our offense.
Yep.
I mean, I probably would draft a wide receiver, but, you know, I don't want it to name be DS-ridge either.
You know what I didn't realize happened in December? You realize that the Falcons traded Calvin Ridley, or the, excuse me, the Jags traded for Calvin Ridley? That was another name. Like, oh, that Calvin Ridley guy, the guy's out this year. Man, he's fast. And what a slot guy he could be. And add that. Oh, shoot, Jacksonville already did it. Mm. I believe that was like a second and a fifth or third and a fifth. So, anywho, we got two more. Justin, Morey, you got two final outside-the-box possible transactions?
I'll be quick so we can get more time. I think they find a way to move on from Jamal, eat the money, and just focus on the front.
I think that could happen. I'm with you on that one.
That out of the box. But yeah. It is out of the box to eat that much money, I guess, at that position, right?
Mora?
All right. This, I guess, is just out of the box as far as Salk, because he loves Rashad Penny so much.
Oh.
I say they do not bring your guy Rashad Penny back. They bring in Jamal Williams, who is 28, had 1,066 rushing yards for the Lions this year, 17 touchdowns. Mm. He's used to splitting carries there, and he gives epic interviews. So we would all have a lot
of
fun.
Disrespect is noted. It will be monitored, and it will be revisited back upon you at some point. You just want him for the interviews. Let's be clear.
Yes.
You just want him for the sound.
It's 17 touchdowns.
The person who cuts the most sound here at the station wants the most interesting interview. Go figure.
By the way, I would just like you all to know
biased much?
How weirded out I am that this is the level it's come to with what you've done with my hands. Someone just texted in that they're watching the stream and they can't stop watching my fingers.
Oh, Pringle finger.
I feel weird.
Oh, Pringle fingers at it again. Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Oh, Pringle fingers. Pressing those buttons all over the board.
You need somebody to write us like an old country song. Oh, Pringle fingers.
If you guys hear some malfunctions going on, it's because I'm hiding my hands and I'm not pushing buttons anymore today. So have fun.
You said it's cold in there. Put some mittens on. Gloves.
Have you thought about wearing mittens to work?
No.
Keep you warm.
Tennis rackets. I'm sorry.
I hate you all.
I'm sorry.
Like the cases that you slide a tennis racket into? Like what are the...
I'm sorry, Moore. I'll stop.
All right, question number one, Brock. Which Seahawks, plural, played the most snaps in 2022? What does that mean?
Well, Mora referenced the defensive tackles, top three defensive tackles. Do you know who number one and two in total snaps were this season for the Seattle Seahawks?
Geno Smith and Charles Cross.
Tariq Woolen, number one.
Oh,
Charles
did you
Cross,
say defense? No, just in general.
Charles Cross, number two. Tariq, number one. Charles Cross,
didn't
number
Geno two. Play every snap?
He did, and so did Charles Cross, and Charles must have played on field goal protection
field
as well. So a couple right. of special teams as well. Geno, the only quarterback to play every single snap. I think there were 20 guys in the entire league that played every snap for their team this year, and he was the only quarterback. Bunch of offensive linemen, but that's it. I mean, that says a ton. As good as the play was, for Charles Cross to play that position and play every single snap. Now, Abe Lucas only missed the one game, right? And he battled through some injuries. Did we even hear of Charles Cross having an injury? Did we even sniff Tariq Woolen? Right, I think one game he went out with a little bit of a stinger shoulder, and I was like, there it is.
Came right back.
Yep, but he bounced right back. It did not miss, you know, a single game, a single other snap, and just, yeah, I don't want to discredit that because we have seen a lot of young players. We've seen De Eskridge, 2 years, can't stay on the field. I'm sorry, Rashad Penny, we've seen immense talent, can't stay on the field. To have those two play at the level they did and not miss a practice on top of a game this season, that's worth a couple gold stars.
Question number two. You asked me this question the other day, Brock, and maybe you can just set it up a little bit more so, but it turns out that the players who are the highest recruits in college offensively don't go on to nearly as much success as the highest recruits defensively. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, I think that's a fair way to characterize it. Bruce Feldman did a great piece over at The Athletic. The average star rating of the defensive players on the NFL All-Pro team. So the NFL All-Pro team came out a couple weeks ago. The average star rating of those guys out of high school was 4.5 stars. On offense, it's 2 stars. Ask some of the sharpest minds in the NFL and college why they think there's such a disparity. And this plays a little bit in the draft and actually played a little bit into my kind of outside-the-box storylines. That you go and, you know what, if you're the Indianapolis Colts, which I was a part of, you draft Dwight Freeney. You draft Mike Doss. You draft the old safety there that helped win him a Super Bowl, whose name's escaping me right now. You draft the elite athletic defensive guys. I need traits. I'm sorry. You can't be a corner and run 4.7. You can be a wide receiver, Hunter Renfrow. You can run 4.7 if you run unbelievable routes and have impeccable timing with your quarterback. Can't play corner. Can't play safety and run a 4.8. Right? Can't be a D lineman and you know, not have power and strength and bench press. So most of those star ratings in high school are for those guys that when you look at them in high school are like, yeah, Kayvon Thibodeau. He's 6'5", 250, runs 4.4, 5 star. And so I need those traits. Now, offensively, and this is probably skewed a little too on the offensive line, Mike. It's like big people in basketball. I've talked to a bunch to these recruiters over the years and girls basketball in particular. Like, yeah, big girls are the hardest to evaluate. Tall, size, like just their coordination, their movement, how it all comes together. Think of, you know, big offensive linemen, right? 2-star out of Cedro Woolley. Yeah, he's got some of it, but man, there's a lot of maturity. He's got to add a lot of strength, a lot of coordination. And we're going to develop that. And, you know, he's going to make it work on the offensive line. So maybe a little more technique, a little more molding on the offensive side versus defense. You react and you go explode, right? I need you to just see it, see ball, and go hit ball. So that may be a part of some of the
whether the offense is a little more scheme dependent too than the defense.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, like,
absolutely.
Are you in the right fit? Are you in the right scheme? You're more dependent on the people around you.
Yep.
Whereas defensive guys can find more ways to rise. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I like it. Question number three.
Well, it plays in this draft, by the way, for these Seahawks. When I say I want guys that are different than everybody else, and when Pete Carroll says, yep, Bosa and Armstead and these guys are just different than everybody else, those are the guys I want, and a lot of them in the first four
picks. Then question number three, does Byron Young fit that bill?
That was, to me...
If you saw Mel Kiper's mock draft today,
I saw that. He was a 20th pick.
I'm telling the people out there. Will Levis was number 5 to the Seahawks, and defensive end, pass rusher, outside linebacker Byron Young from Tennessee, number 20 to the Seahawks. Sounds like Daryl Taylor Redux.
It does, and for your boy right here, it's like James Carpenter. Okay, when the Seahawks took James Carpenter, I remember I was in my hotel room in Connecticut. I was back there doing studio work for the draft, and I remember fielding a phone call from the station, and they just drafted James Carpenter. I'm like, Google, who's James Carpenter? Like, what? Who did they take? Like, he was a name that was not in my Rolodex.
You and Nick Saban, equally shocked.
Pretty much shocked on that one. And James had a heck of a career. I think may still be hanging around in the NFL somewhere. But Byron Young was not a name that I saw this year. I did not see Tennessee up close and personal. So this is no slight. But when you read Mel's evaluation, 6'3", 250, you know, runs, jumps, has kind of Frank Clark and Daryl Taylor. And, hey, man, we need to check these boxes. Because we have to have guys, Mike, that run and hit. We can't run and catch. We can't be a step behind. And this defense for the last too many years has just been catching guys. They have not been the ones setting the tone and setting the edges.
So fair to say when we talk to Mel Kiper next week, you guys are going to disagree a little bit, it seems like.
Mel. Levis? Will Levis? Hey, I'm hearing scouts. Hey, I'm hearing a lot of scouts. Talk about him. He's a Josh Allen. He's a little smaller Josh Allen now. He's got a great arm. He's got great athleticism. He's about 6'6", 240 pounds. No, thank you.
All right, there you go. That is today's Blue 88, some football conversation with Brock, of course, every day at 7:45. Let's dig into that maybe a little bit further. Mel Kiper's draft, mock draft is out as of this morning. And in it, you know, we've sort of said there are four players that stand above in this draft, and you have the number five pick.
Yeah.
There's no other way to look at that. Right? I mean, it's some combination of Anderson, Carter, Bryce Young, and CJ Stroud. Those are in all likelihood the top four picks in this draft, unless somebody gets sneaky and decides they want a quarterback and Will Levis finds his way in there or somebody else. I don't know. But by all accounts, those are the best four players in the draft. The Seahawks have the fifth pick. In this mock draft, they select a quarterback. They select Will Levis out of Kentucky. Measurables guy. Not a production guy. If the Seahawks draft Will Levis at the number five pick, how will you feel? We'll discuss next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.